Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And tonight we look at what it takes to be great, what it takes to rise to the top, and what other city better to do it in than Dubai. Dubai, a city that should have slipped into the sands of the desert during the great pearl crash of the 1930s, but instead has been immortalized in the annals of history. From the vision of late Sheikh Zayed to the invincible spirit of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, Dubai has a homemade legend on almost every corner. For example, Emirates Airlines started with just two used planes. Today, it has well over 200 and is the largest operator of the A380. And it has another 200 plus planes on order. Dubai is also a leader in the creation of its free zones. From the Dubai International Financial Center, which has created global waves, to the Dubai Multi-Commodity Center, which is the Emirates' fastest growing free zone. It was a dusty sandbox previous to 2002, and today it's trading billions of dollars in gold, billions in dollars in diamonds, and just about everything else you can imagine. It's a true global competitor. But the point is that perhaps your life is that dusty sandbox, that sand dune where you feel at some point it's just not going anywhere. Maybe you just got divorced. Maybe you just lost your job. Whatever it is, life has knocked you down to the ground. Well, just look around you, because on every corner of this city, almost every single local business you see has risen up from virtually nothing. And tonight we find out how they did it. Our first guest is a man who has done the impossible not once, not twice, but time and time again. He's the executive chairman of DMCC, the fastest growing free zone, and soon to be the home of the world's tallest commercial tower. His name is Ahmed bin Sulaym. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
Ahmed bin Sulaym is the executive chairman of the Dubai Multi-Commodity Center, the DMCC. It was established in 2002 as a strategic initiative of the Dubai government with a mandate to provide the physical, market and financial infrastructure for a commodity marketplace in Dubai. Ahmed has and continues to play a key role in establishing and positioning the DMCC as a major international commodities hub for trade. Under his leadership, DMCC has introduced a number of value-added products and services. This includes the establishment of the DMCC Free Zone, the UAE's largest and fastest-growing free zone, the Dubai Diamond Exchange, which is the only diamond exchange in the Arab world affiliated to the World Federation of Diamond Bourses, or the DMCC Tea Center, which offers a range of facilities to global tea trade and made the UAE the world's largest re-exporter of tea. Ahmed bin Sulaym joined DMCC in 2001 as a director prior to the Dubai Government Authority's official launch in 2002, and his responsibilities include overseeing the organization's operations. Today, he is the executive chairman of DMCC as well as the director of human resources, director of Dubai Sharia Asset Management and Dubai Commodity Asset Management. He has also played a leading role in reviving Dubai's traditional pearling industry by launching the Dubai Pearl Exchange in 2007 and conceptualized the idea behind Almaz Tower, the tallest commercial building in the Middle East, home to Dubai Diamond Exchange, the largest vault in the UAE and DMCC headquarters.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
Well, Ahmed bin Sulaym, welcome to Eye on Careers. Great to be here. It's a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, it's amazing when you actually look at, you know, some of the successes DMCC has had. But it's not just DMCC, because, you know, there's Emirates Airline, there's Dubai Ports, there's Dubai Duty Free, there's so many companies that you can just go on and on that have literally competed globally based out of Dubai and are are taking, you know, first place or ranking at least in the top 10. Even in retail sector, for example, we have the number one shopping destination in the world. We have the, you know, the number one airport. We have so many. You know, so it, when you look at some of the success you've had, it's amazing, but it's also amazing that it's almost like his ruler, Sheikh Mohammed, has created an environment that just breeds unbelievable success after unbelievable success.
Well, basically, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum focuses a lot on the positive energy, focuses on ensuring that all developments in Dubai are moving with the maximum speed and efficiency. You mentioned the ports and Emirates Airline. The fact that logistically Dubai's hub was strong when DMCC was established helped DMCC grow. If it wasn't for the strong positioning of Jebel Ali Port and then later on DP World and the connection with the African and other continents around the world, especially after purchase of P&O ports, we would not have the synergies we have today, and it all complements itself, including also the airport and the cargo that comes from there and the trading. There's a lot of shipping companies in DMCC. A lot of that helps DMCC. But at the same time, everyone is not being complacent. They're just very energetic, and that gets contagious and gets competitive.
It is contagious because, you know, you sit with someone like yourself and you say, I'm going to build the world's tallest commercial tower. You can't help but coming out of the meeting saying, you know, I don't think I'm thinking big enough about my business or my career or what I'm doing. And I think I started the show saying that, you know, one, first of all, you know, Dubai kind of had its roots bred in a bit of a crisis when the pearl industry crashed, and you know, we had to, you know, you had to reinvent yourselves as an emirate, and you know, when we look at your own business, it literally did start with virtually just a sand, you know, it was nothing more than a couple sand dunes, where now it's globally recognized on many levels. So you know, out there, somebody could be listening, their career could be that sand dune right now. It could not be going very well. And I just had to ask, you know, when you started DMCC, you know, were you ever looking at like, this is a crazy idea, there's not much out here, you know, and were there any doubts? What were the biggest challenges? Did you ever feel like quitting?
When I joined, I was a director, and the initiative was a concept, and it's basically never done before. It's a great concept, and I joined at the age of a little over 22, and I felt it was too far from the main city. A lot of that's what I was hearing, but today it couldn't be in a better position between the two most active airports, representing over 10,000, almost 10,000 companies, which would make a big splash of celebration.
10,000 companies.
Almost
that's
there,
huge.
And once that happens, we'll make sure everyone knows about it. And it ranges from SMEs, startups with Google, Astrolab, Google, which are focusing on attracting a lot of startups within their businesses as well as a business incubator. We have agro, gold, and diamond, and energy companies, and more are coming in. We are building a G+14 gold, LEED gold building, one JLT, and that's well on its way, and that's attracting a lot of businesses as well, especially since they know the reputation and the community.
When you started, how much gold, you know, were you trading? How much diamonds were you trading? And what are the other kind of key things that you were trading? And then tell us today, what are the numbers? How much gold are you trading now versus then? And also, you know, did you think it was going to be this big when you started?
Well, you know, there, one of the sayings His Highness repeats every now and then as a reminder, it's about risk taking, and the biggest one is not taking one, not to explore. You could sit back and say, well, that's not going to happen. We have no business doing that. But if you look at those businesses, the gold centers around the world, the traditional ones, the diamond centers, they didn't start off by being a diamond center. You don't start going to the gym all muscled up. you actually go there out of shape, overweight or skinny or whatever. But with the with DMCC's case, the challenge was a lot of multiple folds, as far as I'm concerned, because there was a challenge of where to start. And when we did start, which commodity should we focus a lot too much on? Industrial? What about trading? What about commercial? And we have a nice holistic ecosystem from manufacturing, vaulting, and refining and trading and cutting, boiling facility for the diamonds, vaulting. And you'll see more and more of these services, whether it's new advanced electronic services from trade flow, the warehouse electronic warehouse receipt system that provides transparency and more credit line, to the products that's being listed on Dubai Gold and Commodities Exchange. I do believe even the diamond exchanges around the world will start adapting new features, because it's over the old way of doing things. Life has changed completely. We're in 2015, and I won't say year on year you're going to see advancements. I believe on the tech side and the smart way of doing business will be advancing every few months rather than year on year.
So what were those numbers, though? I mean, gold, how much gold are you trading right now?
I believe when we started, gold was around $12 billion, and people felt that was the max. People actually used to say, the gold souk will not have any presence in DMCC. And, well, today it's a different story. And the gold trade went up to about $80 billion in 2011, and it wasn't as high. The value increased, but it's hovering around that. So
the
value
diamonds
going down, but the volume is more or less the same. Diamonds, Dubai was the trade, and even on a retail level, wasn't that much. It was business was about $3 to $6 million before DMCC, and within a few years it reached around $20 billion, and in 2011 almost $40 billion, and now it's around $35 or $34 billion.
That is unbelievable. If you are looking to take your career to new heights, we are here with Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC, a man who is going to be building the world's tallest commercial tower. So this is one interview you don't want to miss if you want to get insights into taking your own career to new heights. We're going to be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we are here with Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC. Ahmed, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Great to be back.
Thank you so much for joining us. And you know, everything you're doing is a big inspiration. The fastest growing free zone. I think you have almost 10,000 members now, which are companies, registered companies. How many a month do you do?
During the recession, we actually reached around 200 companies per month, and now we're about, so we're sometimes, we get to 160 on average a month, even now, and we expect that trend to continue.
Did you say during the recession was your fastest growth period?
Yes.
That doesn't even make sense. Why was it the fastest growing? I figured it would be the fastest growing now.
No, actually, for us, it was the recession. The development was being complete. A lot of buildings were being complete. And there was the kind of vibe in the, not our environment, but outside DMCC, was maybe it's time to take a step back and reflect. And I was like, no, this is a time where I need to see this through. The plug hasn't been pulled on me. I'm not pulling the plug on myself. So we kept pushing. It was a bit tough because I had to bring in new talent. I brought in Malcolm and Gautam Sashatil, who Gautam is now our chief executive officer from Dubai Gold and Commodities. And they took a risk moving from an environment that they're comfortable with to a free zone environment. But in the end, it paid off. And that raised some eyebrows, let alone the results as well. And I'm glad I took that risk when I did.
So just before we get into talent and some of the other things, I want to just send a big shout out to Almanzal School for Special Needs, which was founded by Dr. Aisha 10 years ago. This is another big success story, one of the first schools for people with special needs in the region. And she's celebrating tomorrow night in the Symphony Ballroom in the Address Hotel Old Town. And I think anybody wants to go to that event, it'd be a fundraiser, and we're going to have an art auction to raise some money for these children to go to school. You can come down to the Address Hotel in Old Town, and it's a great charity to be involved in, and that's Almanzal School for Special Needs. And Dr. Aisha, you can look them up on the net and contact them there. I think the event starts around 7 p.m. So that's always an exciting thing. And as again, Ion Careers is a career show, and DMCC is actually having a career fair on Thursday, the 12th of February, 2015. So this is coming up pretty soon, next Thursday, actually, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they are also going to have guest speakers giving you advice on how to do your CV and how to present yourself to potential employers and a bunch of other things. So that's something to look forward to as well. So, Ahmed, speaking of interviewing and everything else, I mean, I think one of the key things you did phenomenally well at DMCC was you snagged some really top talent. One of them was Peter Mios, who was kind of a legend in the diamond business in Antwerp, which is kind of the mecca of the diamond industry. Not for long, I guess, if you have your way. But you know, is this kind of strategic headhunting of targeting the, you know, global top talent and bringing them to Dubai part of your strategy, perhaps even part of the strategy of Dubai itself?
Talking about Belgium, they have a lot of opportunities and they have a lot of advantages. They still are one of the top three diamond centers. We're up there with Mumbai and them. There's a lot of respect and complimenting between us. And when I approached Peter, I've known Peter for a while, even when he was heading HRD in Antwerp. He didn't see the offer coming. You know, it came. I put the seed in his mind, and things were getting tough in Antwerp, and he was being blamed for it. And he was just doing his job, letting the government know that there are diamond centers, and you know, Almaz Tower sold out in a matter of a few hours. The tallest diamond tower in the world, tallest commercial tower in the Middle East, sold out in a couple of hours to most of the top diamondiers in Antwerp. He was raising a concern, but it was publicly done, and they kind of even used that, blaming him. Well, don't talk about it. You're making a. So I think a lot of regions in the world didn't see Dubai becoming a diamond center. I think even Antwerp didn't see it happening. Other centers didn't see Dubai becoming a rough diamond center, which is the case today. It's a rough diamond trading center. It's a big one, and polished is following through. Peter, when he joined, he was a different executive, and Dubai has changed him. He's been here a little over 9 years now, and he's not the same Peter Mayes I met over 9 years ago. He's become more international, and he's built more relations with Africa, and that's what Dubai is about. We're very tolerant city. We're an international city like Hong Kong and others, but even more so, we are intimately we have intimate and strong relations with our trading partners and India and the regions around the GCC and the African continent is very important to Dubai.
So, you know, talent is definitely one of the things that's driving your success at DMCC, and you know, I know that you are tenacious, almost workaholic. I don't know. I think it's safe to call you a workaholic because you're working all the time. You're ambitious. You're driven. But, you know, so you're creating a peak performance culture. You know, within your organization, you want to drive peak performance. And one of my questions is, you know, when you're driving peak performance in an organization, do you have to fire people? Do you have to let the hatchet man loose in order to keep that performance up? Do you need to target underperformers and encourage them to find, you know, new horizons?
Well, you know, what's important is to understand why. It's not about just the delivery or the lack of the lack of the delivery or not being up to the standard that was expected. It's more than that. If an employee, doesn't matter how old, young, old, woman, man, doesn't matter to me which region they're from, if they're not giving the right respected type of performance, it's one thing to give chances and give time for them to develop and all that. It's another matter just to keep them there, because it becomes contagious. Others look at it, it brings them down. They're killing themselves between 8 and 5 or working till nighttime. It's also unfair to potential tenant that wants to work are looking for half that opportunity to prove themselves, and they may be better fit. So I don't look at it as it might be a win-win situation for the organization and the departing employee, where that person might learn from this experience and move into an organization where they build themselves. Because a lot of the key successful people in the world, they failed a lot. You know, Michael Jordan failed a lot. Kobe Bryant missed a lot of shots.
Steve Jobs fired from his own company.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And came back to save it.
Yeah, yeah. Donald Trump claimed corporate bankruptcy 4 times.
Yeah, I'm suspicious if that was intended or not.
It could be a strategy in the U.S. So, so failure is part of it. What's been your biggest failure? What's been your darkest moment? What was your missed shot?
I believe I looked at how I develop at work. I get comfortable in a routine. The world kind of moves on a little bit. And, you know, when I address matters, you know, subconsciously, I might have a wealth of experience and all that, but sometimes I would address a situation. It might not be work, it might just be life or anything. And I would handle it as if it's 2005, 10, or 1. That doesn't change in my mind. I don't change as a person very much. I may work, I may learn a little bit more, but I need to sometimes, you know, look at the timing of matters. The other matter that I really think I never saw coming was, I think until recently, and I still am struggling a little bit with it, I think from the age 10 onwards, I've always been a bit emotionally numb, a person that just avoided emotions. And it sounds fine, tough it up and all that, but it does catch up to you. Life throws a few wrenches at you. Work gets very stressful. 2, 3, 4, 5 incidents. And if you don't know how to process setbacks, any small one will let you loose. And that could be dangerous. And that could affect your work, could affect your family. And it did affect me.
How did it affect you?
I do withdraw sometimes. I would just stay in my own radius, not engage that much out of work when I get out of work. So I just do what needs to be done. And I believe that emotional development is important. And I think that's something I'm working on. I'm not sure if I'll get it to 40% or 20%, but as long as I'm aware, I think it should be good.
Do you think, you know, dealing with your emotions, managing your emotions effectively, this is one of the key levers that a leader needs to work with and utilize?
Of course. How many times have you seen His Highness lose his temper publicly or anything like that? I mean, he puts pressure, he focuses, but he His Highness is really patient with a lot of matters. And I believe I'm an example, because I joined at a very young age, and I believe that it wasn't easy when to give chances to young. But the idea is basically to bringing in young employees, bring out different types of matters that might be different from someone that's been more groomed and more institutionalized, let's put it that way. So it was a bit of a gamble, but I believe it kind of worked out well.
This is Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC. If you have a question for him, you can SMS us at 4001. That's 4001, or call us at 04-423-1010. Coming up, Ahmed's going to give us a little insight into the relationship between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Is it friendly? Is it competitive? Is it? We'll find out exactly what that is. This one part of the interview you definitely want to hear.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and I want to have a big thank you to the ICAEW, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, who allow us to bring you a great guest like the one we have with us right now, Mr. Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC. Ahmed, welcome back to Eye on Careers. Thanks for coming, and it's always exciting to have you here. And I think, you know, you're driving one of the big success stories in Dubai. I mean, when you go from trading $3 or $6 million of diamonds to how many is it? $50 billion.
The diamonds reached around almost 40 billion, and
40 billion,
and it's around 35 right now. But that's not an indication of the volumes going down. The volumes are the same. It's just the value of diamonds have gone down. But trade, and it's business as usual moving forward.
So that's huge, because you've gone from millions to billions, right? So any business
not
did
just that. The diamond industry, some parts in Europe are struggling, not being able to find finance. You have a big looming problem with the Antwerp Diamond Bank, with some of its challenges that they're facing, and I think the traditional diamond financing banks are having some challenges there, and that's affected some of the key traders in Belgium. Even though politically it wouldn't be seen in a politically correct way if they move to Dubai and look for finance here, but that is happening. So publicly, you don't hear about it, but I think very soon you'll be showing. And I've seen some have set up which we've never thought would happen.
Well, you know, people constantly look at Dubai, Abu Dhabi. Are they competing with each other? You know, I think historically when we go back, there was some frosty relations. But now, as the country's called United Arab Emirates, is there some competition happening there? Or, you know, are we walking in unison, as the name of the country suggests?
The cities in the UAE and the GCC are very, very tight together. I mean, it's pretty much we have families all across the UAE and across the GCC. We got cousins, families, and friends going back generations. As far as Abu Dhabi and Dubai, it's more of a complementing relation, and you see a lot of events and functions happening in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. If you've been following the news the last few years, you'd know that both are very active and both have their own strong points that they build on.
And I think, you know, I think everyone from Abu Dhabi comes here on the weekend, and then people from Dubai go there for business during the week.
It depends on everyone. Maybe, you know, but there might be people who like to stick within their own vicinity, and the malls have opened up in Abu Dhabi, and there are some amazing projects over there. I recall one of the property events in Dubai, Cityscape and all that. You see projects that are to be built, and Abu Dhabi was displaying Ferrari World and the rest, which were 90% completed. So people see it and they can go visit if they want. So you have some really beautiful projects and jewels in Abu Dhabi as well.
But isn't it, you know, now I think it's almost, you know, that the Arab businessman is competing globally in this day and age. And, you know, Abu Dhabi and Dubai are more concerned with New York, London, Hong Kong, and Singapore than they ever could be with each other.
I don't believe they're concerned. I think they're learning to handle a situation that they may face later, whether it's economic opportunities, touristical opportunities. I mean, I was watching a TED video of an urban planner that was an urban planner that succeeded in developing, I would say, creating life in between some developments, old developments even. And that's something that I can relate to, given that we converged Lake Sea and Jumeirah Lakes Towers into a park. And I'd be interested to do some more of that and add more value and life and have people like more active. I like also what's been done in JBR with the development over there, the cinema and the new restaurants, Real Madrid Cafe, etc.
Well, I think to your point, I think we just overtook Heathrow for the number one busiest airport, Dubai, right?
Well, the way I see it, we were just working and doing what was good for the city and the region. And if we beat another place, I don't think the target was to beat it. I don't think you would have heard any announcement from the civil aviation or something. We're here to beat this or that. We're here to do the best we can and the best and to go to number one. Number one could have been Hong Kong, could have been any other area. But at the end of the day, Dubai got it. And I think there's more to do, though. There's more to do, especially if you look at the plans for Al Maktoum International Airport.
Well, you know, what I love about the city, though, is that, you know, that could be your career. You know, you could have been in 1985, that airline started with two used planes. They couldn't even afford new planes. Today, they're the largest operator of the most expensive, largest aircraft in the world, the A380. You know, your career can go from the same metamorphosis. And, you know, I like what, you know, the subtext of what you're talking about. To me, is one of the keys to success is, you know, you're not focused on getting a title or getting to a certain level. You're focused on developing capabilities and simply being the best you can be. And I don't know if that's one of your success principles or part of the ethos that you bring to the table when you manage DMCC.
I think when I first started, I just wanted to do my job, check in and come in and out. And I think within a few months, I got some more pressured by the board a little bit here and there, and I thought to myself, you know what, nothing lasts forever. I mean, if I'm going to be criticized for anything, I'd like to be criticized for being aggressive. And that theory stuck in my mind for about 11 years, and what brought it back every time was every time I get challenged or I see a matter, I refuse to take the soft way. Or be the flexible way. It's very seldom I do that, and I'm proud and happy to say that the aggressiveness and the has become contagious within the DMCC and the JLT community. You can see our members being demanding, our employees also pushing and moving forward. You talk about Peter. We've brought in talent from outside, but he's changed completely in the last 9 years. We have some homegrown talent, like Maryam Hashimi, who came right off graduation, and now she's, I think, one of the few of the only gemologists that's handling the Kimberley process for the import and export of rough diamonds. You have Franco, who's head of commodity services, and I believe he was pretty fresh when he joined, and he developed the commodities experience. So it's about the will and the attitude when you come into the working environment. There is a time for you to settle in and adapt. And I think that's very important, because you don't go to a job and do the exact same thing every single time, because at least in DMCC's environment, the challenges, the client's needs will vary. For the last 4 years, we've served our members to renew their licenses, apply for visas, etc., all through online. All the services in DMCC can be done online. And I wouldn't say there was some hold back from the members, but some of the members had, I would say, PROs and consultants that didn't want to jump into the new era. They liked it the old way, because if they get things done really fast and they got 5-6 hours, the client's going to think, why am I paying for that much? You need to utilize them. For that's changed now. If you go to where the registration and licensing and renewing is all, there used to be big traffic, and now it's much quieter, because a lot of them love the smart system that's provided to them.
You're almost in an age where, you know, you have to learn new capabilities or you will be extinct.
Not only that, I think some of the talent I see, new, fresh expats, locals, it's like they were born knowing this. So that's how it is. They're born with an iPad in their hand, you know. I think it's in all schools and all that. So I come from a generation where IBM, and there was no Microsoft yet, so there was just these four programs or et cetera. So you're looking at people that take this for granted and move forward, so nobody's going to look back. You know, I'm not going to talk about the typewriter when I'm looking at the keyboard and all that. So it's where we are right now, and the world is much faster.
This is Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC. Coming up, we are going to tackle the issue of Emiratization, localization. Is it a curse? Is it a blessing? Is it helping young Emiratis? Could it hurt their market equity? How is he dealing with it, DMCC? How is it affecting his business? How will it affect your business? And then we're also going to take some questions from our listeners. You know, the SMSs are just coming in nonstop, so we have quite a few questions here that we're going to be tackling, but we'll hear it from the horse's mouth. Localization, yay or nay? So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We're here with Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC. Ahmed, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Good to be back.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, I think one interesting trend that's really sweeping, the entire GCC, and I think other countries much more aggressively than UAE, and probably Dubai is the most liberal and obviously the most expatriate friendly. And I think it also has, you know, benefited from that, because, you know, you see multinationals, we're the most at home here in many cases, at least through economic policy. Definitely through economic policy, the most welcome. And you can see, for example, in Oman, some very stringent regulations against, you know, towards the expatriate community. For example, in Oman, if you resign from a company, you're banned from the country for 2 years, unless your employer signs an NOC, which makes it challenging for, you know. And in Dubai, we don't have any of those issues.
I'm not sure that's related to Emiratization. The ban is really to protect the company so they don't get poached by another. I know about the ban. It happens sometimes here, but Dubai, we handle it. But I know the reason for it, and it's usually they don't want to lose that investment and that employee to the neighbor competing next to them. So they're out for 2 years. Fine, you want to go, you go, but you're not gonna help my direct competition. That's what it's about.
Yeah, but it almost becomes an Achilles heel. If I'm a chief financial officer and the CEO
is
gone wild,
it could get abused. And, yeah. And over here we have experience with that. We know what the situations are, and we do our best. But sometimes it happens a lot in the property section, especially in the construction, where special expertise and talent get poached, and it's going to derail the business.
You don't get poached. So, you know, I think the bottom line is only the best companies deserve the best talent. And if you're not providing the greatest opportunities for your staff, then and creating that great work environment, you're going to lose the best people, you know. And the best companies get the best people, and people should be free to move across. That's healthy competition. You know, when you look at, you know, the most successful economy in the world, by many definitions, the United States, they have the most millionaires per capita. You can walk across the street. So, you know, you have that candor in your boardroom where the CFO can say, I do not believe with anything the CEO is doing. And if we don't change, I'm going to resign and walk across the street and work for the competitor. So you create that candor in the boardroom, which I think is vital, which I think Dubai, out of any country in the GCC, actually has. You know, you can walk across the street. And what I'm saying is, you know, some of these policies are actually hurting the economy. I think that policy personally is hurting the economy of Oman. It's not helping them.
I think Oman knows what they're doing, and they have their reasons. I mean, a few examples doesn't mean it happens everywhere in Oman. I mean, I know a lot of expat former expat who are living there as Omanis. So, you know, they're it's a different country. It's different.
It's a beautiful country. It's one of my favorite countries, by the way.
And I know that its development will continue to progress. So it has they have the talent, they have the workforce, and they have the interest and their geographic location.
Yes, beautiful country. you know, when you look at pioneering markets, there's always challenges of developing local populations. And, you know, we see different policies in different geographies, whether it's affirmative action or amortization. At a certain point, you need some infrastructure in place to help incubate the next generation of leaders. But on the same time, you know, as you drift away from a meritocracy, you almost hurt the same population you're trying to help, you know, in that, you know, we're promoting you not based on your skill set, we're promoting you based on other reasons. It can also be an Achilles heel to the development of those individuals. So how should we approach amortization? How is it working? On one hand, we definitely need to help develop the next generation of local leaders. At the same time, is there any downside to it?
I believe all of this takes time. If you look at Dubai's history, the first two or three police heads in Dubai were expats. A lot of people, if you look at the historical pictures and all that, you'd see English people handling the police and all that. And slowly, locals have picked it up and moved into that. Customs is all locals. It depends on the talent and the local community and the people, whether they're looking to be in this environment. And from my perspective, I wouldn't play the numbers game and make a big fuss about it. I'd rather have I wouldn't focus on the quantity. I'd rather want the quality for the Emiratis who take it for 2 years, 3 years, or even we have veterans who are over 10 years even, who have some who've moved on to greener grass, some who have developed skills that no one else has in the other businesses here in the region. So I'd rather do right by them than give promises that are unattainable. So I think the key word is to be realistic about it.
Be realistic and let it take its course.
Definitely, because DMCC did not exist over 12 years ago. Gold commodities exchanges did not exist. Diamond exchange did not exist. A lot of these businesses are new, and they could have started with 70% locals. Who knows? But reality is the local expat community and some did not see this coming. Today, there's a community, there's a business. You can actually see the tangibility. So some would like to see this, would like some kind of certainty about the business. And that's very important. I know it's important for me, even though I had to join in and it's a concept and all that. So I'm very grateful of the opportunity I've been given, joining a group of three or four people and today around 200.
I heard one speech, and I can't remember who said it, where they said, you know, the expats are scared that the Emiratis are going to take their jobs, and some of the Emiratis are complaining that expats are taking their jobs. And then he said that there's actually more companies registered in the UAE than there are working Emiratis. So how could either side say either way? Because there's more opportunity for Emiratis and expats in Dubai than in any other place in the Gulf.
I think you have to look at what's important to the local community here and what's important to the expats. I read recently that some of the private sector, they recruit, but they don't invest in developing the local talent that they have. Now, that might be one-off experience or two or three or whatever.
Yeah, I have Emiratis, they say, when they're going for a job, they say, am I just a quota or is this a real job where I'm going to have a career path?
It's concerned. The development. The development is important to take training and all that and work and all that. But I feel for them and I feel for the business at the same time, because if it's a very cutthroat business, demanding business, how do you manage this? I mean, look at the just overnight the unpegging from of the Swiss franc, this from the Swiss government on from Europe, cleared off a number of top currency forex businesses just overnight. I mean, some businesses are so cutthroat that
it's kill or be killed.
Yes, and there are some services or that you as a patient or even myself going to the hospital and all that, you want someone with like 1,000, 4,000 patient experience or et cetera, local or expat, yeah. But you just want that exactly. experience. So it's tough. It's a chicken and egg situation. What comes first? And, you know, you give a chance, but on my account. So it depends on what the business is. From our side, we have a lot of developments, and it has to make sense for what we're trying to do in DMCC and the position that person's handling, expat or local.
Well, it's an amazing city, one of the most amazing cities on the planet, and I think 200 years from now, they'll still be talking about the achievements of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed and what he's achieved here in Dubai. What is your? Do you have any last piece of advice for anybody who wants to strive for greatness or take the next step in their careers or in their professions?
Life is filled with opportunities, and always be ready. You will get an opportunity. I mean, when I joined DMCC, no one expected this kind of result. No one expected being the largest free zone and all that. But I joined with a great group of team that have come and gone a few times. Some I'm in touch with, these opportunities come, and you know, if I did not put my mind into not being distracted by the doom and gloom media during the global recession, or not being distracted by people telling me how the gold souk will never move to Dubai, we focused on the international and regional market, and we looked at every opportunity and the challenges that comes our way. My advice to the local and every other person that's looking to develop themselves is, if you want to be an expert in anything in the world, whether it's being an athlete, whether it's being a writer, you put 10,000 hours into it, and that will differentiate you from the majority. You put 10,000 hours, and you will be a required asset in an organization. You put the time and effort, and good things will happen.
Well, I think the real takeaways from my side of your story is the focus, you know, Spartan-like work ethic, and like you said, a focus on creating capabilities, not titles or salaries. I think those are my big three takeaways, and you know, we wish you tremendous luck in building that just another legend that we'll have here in our landscape, the world's tallest commercial tower,
Burj 2020,
as well as you know, your success in reaching 10,000 members in your free zone.
Thank you.
That's Ahmed bin Sulaym, the chairman of DMCC, one of the fastest growing and largest free zone in the UAE. Hopefully we'll hear more from him.